1, 2.
Hello, neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. Today on our show, we feature two farmers. They not only work every hour available to grow and raise food, but they also spend considerable time volunteering with farming organizations and providing governments with policy advice. And giving advice is a fair bit like farming. You can plant the seeds, but you can never be quite sure that they'll grow like you'd hoped. Just after the end of the Second World War, the Commission of Government, the committee running Newfoundland Labrador at the time, set aside over 12,000 hectares of land in the Humber River region, west and north of Deer Lake. It was for returning war veterans. They could apply for a plot of land to be used for agricultural purposes. If successful, they'd be given 20 hectares of land, a roughed-out six-room house, and a bit of money to go toward livestock, farm equipment, and a barn. By 1948, 96 farms had been started, and the community was called Cormac. Today we head to Cormac. Take Route 430 out of Deer Lake, follow the signs for the Cormac Poutinerie, a little distance past the Poutinerie, and you can stop in on your way back. You come to the Long Range Poultry Farm, the first free-run egg producer in the province. We're visiting Nathan Dennis, the owner-operator of that enterprise. It's a hot day in late July. We meet Nathan at his egg layer barn. Come on in. You'll hear the chickens and the fans in the background.
So what got you inspired to go into agriculture? Was there a certain moment or some individual who inspired you?
No, I tell a lot of people I was cursed with it. I just enjoyed it. So I just always liked it and started off with, actually when I finished grade 5, originally I wanted a horse and I wasn't able to get a horse, so I settled for 2 hens and a rooster. But that was my gift for passing grade 5, and then I just gradually continued on from there. So, so that was in 99. And in 2002, I actually did finally get a horse. So I ended up with a Newfoundland pony, actually, was the first one I did. And, the horse was much older than me. I think she was 33 at the time. And then in 2008 is when I got the first heifer calf. And I started there with the cows. And then in 2013, started off with 2 sheep. Then in 2016, they had an expressions of interest put out for applying for new entered egg quota. So I applied for that, were accepted under the expressions of interest. So then we were able to go on to the next round of applying for the actual quota. And then June 14th of last year, 2017, I got the call from the chair of the Egg Market, the Newfoundland, or Egg Farmers Newfoundland Labrador, saying that I was the successful person of new entry quota.
So you decided, you mentioned it's free run, free range or whatever, free run.
Free run. Technical.
There's different terms.
Free run is when they have the free run of the barn.
Yeah.
And scratch area and that kind of thing. Free range is they have the exact same thing on the inside of the barn, but they have access to the outside.
Yeah, as well. Yeah.
And that's a much more complex environment to try to deal with, just because you're dealing with predators, you're dealing with biosecurity issues, that kind of thing. So.
And something called winter here in Newfoundland, Labrador. So is there a reason why you went into the free run as opposed to the more conventional? Or?
Well, I guess one of the things was I figured it was a good selling point of when I was applying. It was a product that wasn't being produced here in the province. It was something that was being sold, getting shipped in out of province. The guy who I buy my pullets off of in New Brunswick, he's fully free run. He has breeder flocks. He raises pullets. The pullets are all raised free run. And he's also a commercial egg producer. And so I had a lot of good information to take from. And I actually went over and visited on East. Well, I visited East Farm a few times, but actually went over and worked on East Farm. I think it was for 3 or 4 days while in the process of applying and just to get the work experience. Yeah. The bird itself wasn't new to me, but the free run system was. With free run, it takes a lot more management just because of you have to manage your lights a whole lot more because the hen can only remember so many other birds.
Okay.
So I like to describe it to people like the movie 50 First Dates. Basically, every morning when you have a flock, like currently now it's 2,500 in that section of the barn, every morning they wake up, they don't remember who anybody else is, so they reestablish the pecking order every day.
Oh, okay.
So, whereas if it's into a battery cage, or like now they have the new enriched system, you know, it's still groups of birds, but not as big as groups.
Yeah.
So they can establish their pecking order, they figure out who's higher up and who's at the bottom, and everybody just goes about their business.
Right.
But when you have them in large pins like this, so then it comes down to a lot of it is scratch area is really important. Kind of gives them something to do so they're not bored, you know, decide to pick on each other so much.
Yeah.
And lighting is also another thing, because light is, or hen sight is directly related to light.
Okay.
So with less light they have, less sight they have.
Yeah.
So you can't decrease the light too fast, because you don't want the effect on their drinking, or their, you know, you want them to be able to adjust as you're decreasing. So you still want to have enough. Now, some people say the rule of thumb is that if you can read a newspaper in there, that's bright enough.
If you were starting over again, would you do anything differently, or is it you sort of had a very incremental approach?
Yeah, there's pros and cons of doing it that way. There's times that sometimes you almost just need to bite the bullet and go and borrow the money to get what you need, because sometimes not having a particular piece of equipment that you can't afford it with your own cash flow, sometimes it actually costs far more in the long run. But then also I like starting off with a bit smaller, so that if you make a mistake with a small amount, it doesn't feel so bad if you made a mistake. And so here with this barn as well, we have it divided in two sections. Now, it's done for a number of different reasons. One of the biggest things is just to help with cash flow, because the way it works is when we're replacing our flock, which happens every 12 to 14 months, it's all in, all out. So this particular part of the barn we call Barn 1, they were placed last November. So this November, they'll be all removed and then put in a new flock. So then when you have a downtime of between a week to 2 weeks, usually about a week to 10 days typically. So then, of course, you have that time with no egg production. And then after that, then, of course, you're dealing with an animal. So it's not like an assembly line. You just don't turn a switch and everything's full production.
Yeah.
So you have, by the time they get up to production and get up to egg size, because all eggs don't start off as large and extra large, start off as you're way up.
Oh, okay.
By the time you get them up to production and up to size, you're probably looking at, from the time you clean out one batch of birds, you're probably looking at 6 to 8 weeks. The reason we did two sections of the barn was that, so now barn two will be ready in the next couple of weeks, and there'll be a batch of birds going in around the middle of August.
Okay.
They'll be in full production when these birds are out. So
okay.
It's always half of the barn
producing
at all times.
The consumer, like myself, when I buy an egg, do I pay a little bit more if it's a free run as opposed to...
And it does cost a fair bit more to produce free run. A couple of reasons is you can't put the same bird densities. I mean, when they're into either a conventional cage or even into the enriched housing cages, you know, they're stacked. Now, I don't mean that they're stacked and compressed, but, you know, they have multiple levels on one floor of the barn.
Yeah.
Whereas in here, they can only access one level of the floor.
Yeah.
So therefore, there's less birds to, you know, take on the price of that barn. The other reasons is where there's not as many birds. In the wintertime, we actually have to heat the barn with propane.
Okay.
The barn won't freeze, but the temperatures won't stay high enough to keep the fans going, keep the air quality going. So basically, we produce heat to throw it outside.
Because
we need it to get that airflow.
When I first asked Nathan about a song to use, he was a bit evasive. Something country, I'm sure, he said. So I asked him sometime later, and there was no hesitation in his decision. Here's Small Town Southern Man by Alan Jackson.
Born the middle son of a farmer and a small town southern man. Like his daddy's daddy before him, brought up working on the land. Fell in love with a small town woman and they married up and settled down. Natural way of life if you're lucky for a small town southern man. First there came four pretty daughters for this small town southern man. Then a few years later came another, a boy he wasn't planned. 7 people living all together in a house built with his own hands. Little words but love and understanding from a small town southern man. And he bowed his head to Jesus, and he stood for Uncle Sam, and he only loved one woman, was always proud of what he had. He said his greatest contribution is the ones he'll leave behind, raised on the ways and gentle kindness of a small town southern man.
I'm speaking with Nathan Dennis, a mixed farmer who produces eggs as well as root crops, sheep, beef, and pork. We start this section talking about how to get more people involved in food production.
In your mind, what are some things that we can do or are doing that inspire young people to go into farming?
I guess one of the things that I would think, in talking to a number of farmers that are in the retirement age, if there be a way that we could have almost like a mentorship program, even like a succession plan in place. Even though we're encouraging young farmers, we're basically getting young farmers to go into a standing force and be pioneers to grow. And that all takes time. It even gets time, even if we can get the land cleared, it takes time to get that land to be productive. So if we had a way that these young farmers could come in and go to an existing farm that's already producing, if we have these farmers that are ready to sell out and don't have any family members to take it over, as we have new farmers being pioneers and starting farms, we're not gaining any ground because we have them leaving as fast as they're coming. So yes, we're just threading water.
Yes.
So I think if there'd be a way that we could bridge that gap somehow, you know, if even if there would be, I mean, that's just me thinking on how I would try to approach it if possible. Even if I went and worked with the farmer for a few years, you know, say if I could come up with the money to pay so much towards the cost of putting the crop in the ground. And then if you get a certain percentage of that back out, then you can reinvest it.
Access to agricultural labor is a little bit difficult. So it's not just young farmers trying to get in, but there are also existing farmers who maybe can't expand because of that. Do you see any solutions happening around that?
I guess, you know, there are foreign workers coming in. Fill in the gap. I know there's frustration for some people who see foreign workers working, and again, not trying to be a pessimist, but just saying the way it is, facts is facts. You know, we have a certain percentage of our population that, you know, when Fort McMurray and other places in Alberta, or even when there's other things booming around here, when the wages were high, they had high wages and then they worked that hard. Well, I'm sorry, there's nothing much in agriculture that's going to be that easy of a job.
The way forward is sort of what we're all looking at. Among those initiatives, are there some that you really think are ones that you champion?
Newfoundland is not necessarily unique to the situation, just that we're at the end of the line of the situation. We have to compete with maritime farmers. Maritime farmers have to compete with Quebec and Ontario. Quebec and Ontario have to compete with USA. USA has Ontario farmers beat down, so then they beat down the Maritimes, and the Maritimes beat us down.
Right.
We probably cost absolute most to produce for where we're two stuck on a rock in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, but we're at the very end of the line. You know, and there's some stuff coming back that the, you know, consumers are pushing for some local, which is very positive. And I think it's going to come down to a lot of, if people want to see more stuff produced locally, the consumers have a big part to play into it. But the main thing is, you know, if the consumers say that they want local, they actually have to practice what they preach.
I've seen you at lots of meetings. You're very active towards the Federation and other things and so on. What are the things that you get out of that interaction with people, with other farmers?
I find a lot of the advantages of just being part of it, like even when we get together for AGMs, it's just the networking part. That's a huge benefit. You know, now there's lots of other benefits as well. I mean, there's lots of good workshops a lot of times that's, you know, being held in whatever it's a federation or for the Art Council. I'm also a firm believer that this is my industry and it's my living. If I'm not going to be active and try to promote it, try to put it forward, you know, if I'm not going to put my effort into it, how can I expect to get a return of it in the long run?
What does a consumer want in an egg today?
I guess freshness.
Freshness?
I guess would be
the
biggest thing.
Yeah.
Market for eggs, they've really increased. It's either 11 or 13 years in a row now that egg consumption has climbed in Canada every year. There's been an increase in it. And a big part of it, too, now is that this is all-day breakfast.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of restaurants and stuff are offering this all-day breakfast.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of good about eggs. I mean, they're high in protein.
Yeah.
They got a lot of nutrients.
Yeah.
I eat a fair bit of eggs, and Especially the scrambled eggs is I don't know what happens to scrambled eggs, is like to deflate or something. if I have two fried eggs or two boiled eggs, that's lots. But when I go to have scrambled eggs, I usually either have four or six.
That's right. Is there kind of an area of agriculture that you would be interested in getting into someday down the road?
I've often tossed around in the back of my mind about doing hydroponics. Mm-hmm. That can be a little bit more of a steady income once you're producing. You do have some of that downtime of when you clean out your greenhouse. And it's bounced around the back of my mind before. I really enjoy cows. I don't mind an occasional milking, but I don't know if I enjoy milking enough to actually be at a full-time with a dairy farm. But I think my interest and my like for cows is satisfied enough by having beef cows.
Okay. So what's your favorite feed of local food?
I guess local food, I guess, would be just your typical jigs dinner. Probably my best.
To have eggs in there somewhere. But.
Well, you know, you have your bacon and eggs for breakfast, and you have your jigs dinner for... But as much as I'm a farmer, it's a good feed of codfish or something. Won't go astray either, so...
Nathan, thanks so much for taking the time. Best of luck.
No problem.
Violent death came calling for the small town southern man. He said, it's all right, cause I see angels and they got me by the hand. Don't you cry and don't you worry, I'm blessed and I know I am. God has a place in heaven for a small town southern man. And he bowed his head to Jesus, and he stood for Uncle Sam, and he only loved one woman, was always proud of what he had. He said his greatest contribution is the ones he'll leave behind, raised on the ways and gentle kindness of a small town southern man. Raised on the ways and gentle kindness of a small town southern man.
Further on up the road from Nathan's place, I was able to meet up with Melvin Rideout of Rideout's Farm. You might recognize his picture if you've ever bought a bag of his turnips or potatoes. It took us a month to find a time that worked for both of us. He was busy. Oh, and getting married and all. I tracked him down in one of his fields at the end of the summer. It wasn't so hot that day, thanks to the wind and the rain.
What am I looking at in front of me here?
This is a 4-H field. We're doing second cut, and half in the distance is a turnip that we're getting ready to harvest here now.
Yeah. So did you grow up always knowing you're going to be a farmer?
Yeah, right from I guess, elementary school on up through, I knew I was going to be a farmer.
No choice, no.
lots of choices, but no, this was my passion, it's my life.
Yeah. How do you find out, like, when you're trying to figure out new ways to do things, where do you get your information?
A lot of information will come from the government. They'll bring in things, they'll try, and they'll pass it off to the farmers, and some more things, we'll just search it up on the web and see how it's grown, the nutrients that are required, and we'll take it from there.
Would you do anything differently?
Probably grow a lot more than we are.
Okay, so you have no trouble selling it?
Yeah, there's no trouble selling it. There's a big market out on the East Coast that we could still fill and not have any problems. Yeah.
And so the crops that you grow mostly are?
Potatoes, turnip, and cabbage would be our main crop. But we do grow beets, carrot, cauliflower, broccoli, and this year we're trying some Brussels sprouts, and we got celery in this year.
And you sell it at your own place, but also at
our
stores?
Yeah. We sell it at our own market, along with the Coleman's, Food Centers, and Foodland, Dominion, Sobeys. Yeah. We do all the major chain stores in the island.
Yeah. I see your brand here and there.
No, that was a brand we done, I guess, 6, 7, maybe 8 years ago. Was when they were doing the best kind brand actually for the island.
Okay. Yep.
And I was working with the marketers there then, and he said, no, I got an idea for you, and then he just sent the picture off to me, and I liked it, and that's what we done. Then we turned the brand after myself, be the brand for the company.
You know that we're in the midst of trying to double food production, but are there things that you're doing to help with that?
I'm sitting on a lot of the different committees that was put into place to try to move everything forward. And So in light of that, we're trying to look at moving and putting more wheat and everything in production for our dairy industry, for our dairy farm, trying to get more self-sufficient there in our grains. And as for the root crop, we're trying to stay steady at the level that we were and not cut back while we're increasing our forage and stuff for the dairy. And within the next year or so, hopefully we'll start and do more expansion with the vegetable side.
I know there are 43 principles or whatever. Are there some that you're favorites in terms of increasing food production?
I guess a public storage where farmers can get back to what they do, which is grow, and we're good at, and have someone do the marketing, the storing, and packaging would be a great beneficial way to move forward for both farmers that are already in production and new farmers coming up. It would take care of a lot of that initial capital costs of getting started into the farming.
Yeah. The other part of this is trying to get new farmers of whatever age to start up. Are there some things that when you were starting up that you could have had some help with?
Well, I guess I was lucky being a third generation farmer that everything was in place and operational and running when I took over and started working the farm with my family. I guess new farmers starting up is really, I guess, knowing your cost of production, know what you're doing, have a market and storage before you grow is another main thing. A lot of times they'll just start and put stuff in the ground and grow it because we can grow again, but when it comes to the fall and you got to store it before you can sell it, then it's kind of like, oh well, this is a step I missed.
Are people asking for something different from their food these days? Like, there's a lot of discussion about food in the media, but
mostly they just want local and they want to know where it's coming from. They don't want it shipped in from all over again. Now they're moving back to local, seeing, I guess, being fresher, safer for when it comes down to pesticide sprays on potatoes. I mean, we're probably the only place left that don't have the spray for Colorado potato beetles. I mean, that's just one spray there that we don't have to use that's used everywhere else.
Yeah.
And there's different things, I guess, in the Hilton Billy economy.
Often we talk about the challenges here in Newfoundland Labrador of agriculture. So you referred to one of the benefits of doing agriculture here is the lack of Colorado beetle. Are there other benefits to doing agriculture here?
It's starting to get harder and harder because our summers are getting hotter and hotter and we're finding more pests now than we ever had before. But still, we don't have as many pests as they find in more of the hotter, drier climates than we have here.
As we stood there in the rain, I asked Melvin about a song suggestion and he quickly said, maybe I'm no stranger to the rain. Seems appropriate. But I checked later, after it stopped raining, and he suggested a different song, one with a great deal of meaning for him. Here's Dan Seals with You Plant Your Fields.
My father said, some things you learn by only doing when it comes your turn. Everything comes around, so be ready if you can. Prepare your heart like a farmer turns the land. You plant your fields when the spring is tender, when the summer beats down, you pray for rain. You hope for the harvest, long cold winter. And then you plant your fields again.
I'm speaking with Melvin Rideout of Rideout's Farm. He's been very active in farming organizations, having served with the Newfoundland Labrador Federation of Agriculture, including as president. I asked him about his motivation for being involved in such groups.
The motivation for that is more or less an industry-wide. Being the president was a real good time for me. Moving the full industry forward, whether it be the dairy or vegetables or beef or chicken, anything like that, the federation level, you're moving an industry forward, not just a commodity.
Are there some commodities that you think are going to expand in Newfoundland Labrador?
Definitely the vegetable, I say, and the beef and sheep industry are where the biggest movements can be moved forward. Efficiencies can be made in the other other commodities, but we're already self-sufficient in the most of the other commodities. So the efficiencies are there to gain, but when it comes to actual growth, as for growing more, it would be beef and sheep and into the root crops.
There's a lot of discussion about secondary processing too these days. Do you see that ramping up?
It's definitely an area that needs to ramp up. I haven't heard a lot of talk of it as of yet, but I'd say like trying to gain the 20% by 2022, 10% of that 20 could be gained by secondary processing and using what's on the, say, the grade outs from Canada number one.
Are you still opening up land here for your farm?
Yeah, we're still opening about 60 to 100 acres a year.
Really?
Because we're actively trying to get up to 500 acres of winter and spring wheat.
Okay.
To offset some of the costs in our dairy. So, I mean, we're actively clearing. Now, while we're clearing it, we're using it for root crop before we put it into grains because it's nice, clean soil. There's no weeds, there's no diseases, so it's perfect for root crop.
How many years does it take to clear from forest to agriculture?
Forest agriculture, if you want to do a good job on it, would be probably about a four-year process. Time you cut off the trees and let the roots in that die so you're not taking too much soil off what you're clearing. And then you got the rock picking and removing the stumps, putting the lime and that on, getting the soil to where it should be.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a minimum of 3 years to do a good job.
So that's a fair investment of time before you ever get a crop.
Oh, it definitely is. Then it's up to Mother Nature. She can, that can change your crop real quick.
Right. What's your favorite local vegetable or meat or whatever?
I guess beef would be my favorite in when it comes to meats. I'm a big steak eater myself.
Oh, yeah.
But other than that, the traditional crops, potato, turnip, and cabbage, carrot, jigs dinner type thing.
So you mentioned something about storage. And so I see your product in the store throughout most all of the whole year.
Yes.
Is that because you've got storage?
Yeah. We have enough storage for everything that we're growing. And we have a little bit of extra storage if we happen to have a bumper growth year. But for the most part, we store all of our product. We find in the fall where everyone is trying to get their crop out of the ground, everyone's selling at one time, there's a lot of product into the stores. So, I mean, we'll put the bulk of ours in storage and we'll sell mostly from, say, Christmas on, December on until we're finished, which is usually, again, late February, March. We'll have potatoes into April and May. But the storage is definitely something that needs to be moved way forward. Like if we're going to grow 20% by 2022, it's going to have to be in storage. Growing a whole lot more in the fall when you can eat it doesn't help you when ferry can't sail in the winter.
That's right. So if people would just eat 20% more in September, we'd be
We'd be good if they all eat it in September, October.
Well, Melvin, thanks so much.
Yep, thank you.
He spoke right to my restless soul. Still wild and hungry and beyond control. For all that you dream, there's a time and a place. But you won't know it till it comes your way. And you'd plant your fields when the spring is tender. When the summer beats down, you pray for rain. You hope for the harvest, the long cold winter. And then you plant fields again when the spring is tender. When the summer beats down, you pray for rain. You hope for the harvest, the long cold winter.
Sixty years after the initial idea to open up agricultural land in Cormac, that community is still a leading food production region in the province. But it took a while. Agriculture is a long game. This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. If you have questions or comments, email me at fittoeatnl, one word, @gmail.com. To listen to other episodes or for more information, go to www.fittoeatnl.ca. Music for today's show was Small Town Southern Man by Alan Jackson and You Plant Your Fields by Dan Seals. The theme music, Pluck Old Hen, was done this week by New River Bluegrass. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications with the support of the Newfoundland Labrador Federation of Agriculture and Food First NL. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. Happy trails.
And then you plant your fields again.
He said his greatest contribution is the ones he'll leave behind, raised on the ways and gentle kindness of a small town southern man. Raised on the ways and gentle kindness of a small town southern man.